It's a pleasure to have Scott Borma back in the studio here at WMUK as director of the University Symphonic Band. The group is playing Sunday at 3 o'clock in Miller Auditorium, a 3 o'clock concert, free and open to the public. Nice to have you here again, Scott.
Always great to be here.
Tell me about the first few weeks of the semester. How have you been?
We're rolling. There's no stopping us now. It's always a fun time to meet new people and have new students in the ensemble. We get some new graduate students and some new undergraduate students, and just, you know, seeing everybody getting used to the new digs and welcoming back the members that have been with us for years. And it's just a very vibrant time. People are very excited about what's going on, and we're throwing together a lot of music very, very quickly. I know my colleague Bruce Uchimura just put on a concert yesterday with lots of great music. And so these students are very busy because a lot of them are in the same ensembles. And so they're learning a lot of music and getting their lessons rolling and their theory and their history and all that stuff. So it's exciting.
The Symphonic Band is an auditioned ensemble.
Yes.
Was there a panel of faculty that
I am blessed with fantastic faculty colleagues that basically the flute professor auditions all the flutes and the clarinet professor auditions all the clarinets and down the line. And then we kind of chat about the results because they know these students' individual playing better than I could ever, you know, having them in a large ensemble. And so when they come in, they really have a sense of, based on the audition, where things will fit, where students are going to be most successful and how the ensembles are going to be set up to be successful. And every studio teacher listens to the auditions for the first few days of classes, and we put together a list, and we have a band. We have an orchestra.
I seem to recall being 10th flute in the Symphonic Band about so many years, many, many years ago. And that is kind of an interesting feature, that how many clarinets and flutes and saxophones kind of fill out the full sound,
right,
of the Symphonic Band. Could you compare and contrast the way an orchestra sets itself up and the way a symphonic band sets itself up?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. And the answer is mainly that with modern bands, concert bands, symphonic bands, there are quite a number of personnel possibilities based on the repertoire that we're playing. Whereas in an orchestra, you have basically one on a part through all the wind section, and then you have a lot of violins and a lot of violas and a lot of cellos and basses that provide that string resonance, a lot of doubling in that section, but individuals playing all of the wind and percussion parts. The old symphonic band style was having a lot of doubling. You'd have 10 flutes, you'd have 20 clarinets, you'd have 9 trumpets, and there'd be 3 people playing first trumpet. You'd have 2 people or 3 people playing second trombone. And in the middle of the past century, kind of kicked off by Frederick Fennell at the Eastman Wind Ensemble, he decided, well, why don't we make this ensemble smaller and get more one-on-a-part playing, and created what is now known as the Wind Ensemble. So anybody that calls their band a wind ensemble, unless they're playing with one-on-a-part, isn't really a wind ensemble in the traditional sense. So we'll play a piece that has a full complement, a big band, 65 members in the ensemble. There'd be a lot of doublings to get the kind of sound that, for instance, Percy Grainger was looking for when he wrote his music. But then we'll also have a lot of new compositions where one on a part was in mind, in the composer's mind, when creating the music. So we'll have one first trumpet player, one second trumpet player, and so on. So it just kind of depends on the composer's intent, the music that we're playing. And we have a group of about 65 students, and one piece you'll hear 30 of them, one piece you'll hear 45 of them, one piece you'll hear all of them, and just kind of change it up.
Again, it's a free concert on Sunday at 3 o'clock in Miller Auditorium. That is exciting to think that modern day composers can choose to divide a section as many times as they like to get different, just one or two people on a part, for very complex harmonies, right, and rhythms as well.
Well, it's a very, we've talked about it before, it's a very exciting time in the wind ensemble slash band world, because university conductors and high school conductors are very interested in commissioning new music. It's, you know, we have a relatively short span of time where band music has been written, whereas the orchestra has hundreds and hundreds of years of fantastic music. We're very hungry to commission composers to write new music. And so when we commission these people, they always ask, well, what's the instrumentation you want? And nine times out of ten, we kind of say, whatever you want it to be. We want you to create your best work. And if that means four clarinet parts or seven clarinet parts, whatever you hear is what you want. And so we get quite a variety of different needs with all of these pieces.
You have a new graduate assistant conductor this semester. She'll be conducting the very first work on the program. Tell me a little bit about Laura.
Laura Zilhaver is a fabulous student, and this is actually her second year here, but last year she conducted mainly the concert band. So she's new conducting the symphonic band this year, and so she's rounding out her master's degree this year. She'll be conducting on nearly every concert we do, and just has really, really taken off as an outstanding not only rehearsal technician, but compelling physical artist. And I think we're really seeing her come into her own on this piece. She's going to kick the concert off. The first sounds you hear of this year's ensemble will be conducted by Laura as she conducts Franz von Suppé's Light Cavalry Overture.
Oh, fantastic. And then I want to ask you about the following piece. This says 2011 on it.
Hot off the presses.
Yeah, exactly. As you mentioned, you know, if you go to a symphonic band concert, you're going to hear new sounds, new voices. Yep. It's a really exciting time.
Yeah, we go from Light Cavalry Overture, which was written in 1866, to the next piece, which is called Sound and Smoke, which was written in 2011 by a gentleman named Viet Cong. And you're not hearing that incorrectly. That's his actual name, Viet Cong. He's a Vietnamese composer. He's working on his doctorate at Princeton at the time. And I have not been able to get the answer from him whether I assume he was born in Vietnam and is studying in America. But I don't know for sure. So I'm guessing on that one.
He's still working on the piece or last touches.
Yeah, exactly.
He can't get to you.
But he's a young guy. He's born in 1990. So he's 26 years old and is really producing some really compelling music. And this piece being one of them. It's called Sound and Smoke, and it sounds like it would be very programmatic, like it must be telling some story, but the funny thing is he's not really telling anything literal here. He actually got the title and the concept from Goethe's play Faust. Faust equates words to mere sound and smoke, and declares that feeling is everything. And so it's kind of an abstract look on just that idea that that only these titles can serve as starting points for personal interpretation and don't necessarily interfere with the music itself.
How does a composer get in touch, and how in the world did you find a 26-year-old composer and a piece called Sound and Smoke?
Well, it just comes from, again, there are so many conductors, especially at the university level, who seek out these composers. They hear something that somebody's written. They're just like, oh, that guy could write a good band piece, you know? And we go to a lot of conferences, the College Band Directors National Association conferences and our state conferences and the American Bandmasters Association conference. So there are always other ensembles playing new music that we're exposed to at these various places. And, you know, right now everybody's live streaming their concerts. And so you can listen to the Florida State University Symphony playing something live just by turning on your computer. So we get exposed to a lot of these new sounds on a regular basis, and word of mouth, and said, oh, you should try a piece or play one of Viet Cong's pieces because he's got a fresh new sound, and it just kind of keeps it rolling, and we exchange those ideas that way.
So we should have a look at sort of the centerpiece of the program, and it is nice to see that you really balance a program with what are considered band classics and the new, because your students need exposure to how the band developed and the literature that really put it on the map.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Map. We're going to Lincolnshire now, I
believe. Right, yeah, absolutely. Percy Grainger. This piece, Lincolnshire Poesy, is considered just one of our the staples in our repertoire. Every student going through a university program should be exposed to this work. It's just that important. It's on everybody's top 10 lists throughout the world. And Percy Aldrich Grainger was an Australian composer, lived from 1882 to 1961, and he spent a lot of time in England, very interested in folk songs. And back in the turn of the century, after the 1900s, he would go around to various little towns with a little recording device. At that time, very
primitive.
Primitive is the word I'm looking for.
And it might not have been so little.
You're right. You know. He lugged it around. You're absolutely right. And so he went around and just had people singing these songs, and he'd record them. And we all know that. Folk singers or just some guy on the street, they don't necessarily sing things really precisely, and if it had a particular meter, they sing it with feeling and soul and heart. And so he decided to take these folk songs that he collected and write his versions of them in this collection of six of them called Lincolnshire Poesy, which he calls his musical wildflowers. And he generally kept the rhythm and the inflections that these folk singers would sing to him and would put it literally into the piece. So instead of something that, if you've got a melody, da 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 da, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, he would arrange it. It would have 5-4 measures, 6-4 measures to kind of match the length of time. Da 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 da, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, yeah, kind of adding those extra beats in there to match exactly what the singer was trying to portray. And so it became this, and then you have all these lush, rich harmonies that Grainger adds in his music that sounds like no other composer in the world. You just hear something and it's like, oh, that's definitely Grainger, these thick, rich chromatic textures. And so to play a piece like this requires incredible skill, because you've got 3-8 followed by 5-8 followed by 4-8, all these time signatures that are constantly changing, and your internal pulse has to be pretty magical to take what one guy on a street corner sang and then suddenly have 65 people play it exactly in sync and the same kind of inflections. And so it's considered one of those really, really tricky pieces to pull off, and we're having a good time doing it.
Well, Percy Grainger is considered an eccentric genius. And listeners, if you ever come across a biography of Grainger, it's probably well worth
the read. Yes, definitely.
So what can you tell me, what are we going to listen to from Lincolnshire Poesy?
Well, as I said, we have six different movements. So they're based on six different folk songs that he collected. To each of them, he shares stories in his writings about his work, of his experiences with these various people. And it might be interesting to just hear the little story he tells about this first movement, which is called Lisbon, and starts the piece in very jaunty, ba-dum, da-dum, da-dum, kind of a feel, 6-8 feel. But here's what Grainger wrote about this one. The first number in my set, Lisbon, was collected under characteristic circumstances. In 1905, when I first met its singer, Mr. Dean of Hibblestow, he was in the workhouse at Brigg, Northeast Lincolnshire. I started to note down his Lisbon, but the workhouse matron asked me to stop, as Mr. Dean's heart was very weak, and the singing of the old song, which he had not sung for 40 years, brought back poignant memories to him and made him burst into tears. I reluctantly desisted. But a year or so later, when I had acquired a phonograph, I returned to get Mr. Dean's tune, Alive or Dead. I thought he might as well die singing it as die without singing it. I found him in the hospital ward of the workhouse with a great gash in his head, he having fallen down the stairs. He was very proud of his wound and insisted that he was far too weak to sing. All right, Mr. Dean, I said to him, you needn't sing it yourself, but I would like you to hear some records made by other singers in these parts. He had not heard half a record, though, before he said impulsively, I'll sing it for you, young man. So the phonograph was propped up on his bed, and in between the second and third verse, he spoke these words into the record. it's pleasing me, which shows how much folk singing is a part of a folk singer's natural life.
I'm back with Dr. Scott Borma, the director of the University Symphonic Band, which appears on Sunday at 3 o'clock in Miller Auditorium with a free program, including the Lincolnshire Posy, or Lincolnshire Posy, of Percy Aldrich Granger. And we just heard the first movement of that piece, along with an incredible anecdote of Percy basically hounding an old man.
You're right,
until
exactly.
He got
deathbed.
The tune. I suppose it went like that for a number of his collections and songs.
Yeah, he's got a lot of interesting little stories, and nothing as compelling as that. But the second movement of the piece, Horkstow Grange, to the casual listener sounds like just this pretty little ballad, but it's actually the words behind it are quite tragic. Some of them, in Horkstow Grange there lived an old miser. Y'all do know him, as I've heard say. It's him and his man that was named John Bolin. They fell out one market day. With a blackthorn stick, old steel I struck him. Often had threatened him before. John Bolin turned round all in a passion. He knocked old steel eye into the floor. Basically, he's about this guy is killing a guy, one of his co-worker. And, you know, when you listen to it, it starts out this gorgeous, pretty music, and then becomes pretty tragic. The way he combines the harmonies and the counter melodies and the clashing of some of the chords, it really tells the story. And that's definitely his mode of operation throughout the whole piece.
Well, while we have the chance, why don't we hear some of it?
Sounds great.
Horkstow Grange, the name of that piece from Lincolnshire Posy by Percy Granger. I'm here with Dr. Scott Borma, who will lead the University Symphonic Band in concert on Sunday at 3 o'clock. And Lincolnshire Posy is the centerpiece of the program. So that was quite an interesting setting of a tune that sounds really beautiful, but is mm-hmm. quite a violent story behind
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and it's interesting that something that pretty, how it ends very unresolved and just tragic.
Well, where do we go from here?
Well, the third movement is called Rufford Park Poachers. And, you know, I won't get into the details of the words of this song, but it's fascinating. This is one of the most complex movements of the piece in that it's constantly shifting time signatures for musicians out there that, you know, we have a 2/4 measure, 2 beats per measure, and then we'll have a 5/8 measure, which is 5/8 notes per measure, and then we'll have a 3/8 measure with 3/8 notes per measure. So the rhythm is constantly evolving, and interestingly so too, the melody is constantly twisting here and there, and it comes from the recording he made of some person singing the song, and the person didn't always sing it quite perfectly. There would be sometimes, I'll even sing a little bit of it, the main melody. And then the next time the person would sing it, they go. You know, so it kind of shifts and almost modulates at times, but it's purely because it's just this human singing this song and not too concerned about being really precise in all of the note choices. And so Percy, staying true to this person who sang it, writes this movement where those kind of differences and unexpected twists and turns happen. And he really takes it to fascinating places. Just a marvelous, marvelous movement.
Rufford Park Poachers is mm-hmm. the name of the ballad collected by Percy Grainger and then set faithfully in a certain way to music for band. Percy Grainger's Lincolnshire Posy is on the program this Sunday from the University Symphonic Band, led by Dr. Scott Borma, my guest today here on WMUK. You were saying how surprising his music is and how, you know, complex it can be and strange to look at. But when you hear it, mm-hmm. it just all sounds right.
Yeah. It's just, he was ahead of his time. That's such a cliche to say, but when you hear it, it still sounds fresh. It's just, it goes into very chromatic places, but it never strays far enough to not be enjoyable and not be delightful.
And even though we call him eccentric, it's not like his music is deliberately showing off or eccentric. It
right.
seems really true mm-hmm. to the source. And
yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, we were saying about that previous movement, skipping ahead to the fifth movement, which is called Lord Melbourne, same kind of a thing. He tries to stay true to the folk singer who sang it for him when he recorded the piece. And if you looked at the score that I'm reading from, there are several segments in this particular one that have no time signature whatsoever, and they call for the conductor to just almost randomly beat time on certain notes and try to make them different every time. It opens with this big brass beam, pom, pom, dum, pom, pom, dum, pa, dum, pom, you know, and trying to, you imagine this old fellow sitting on the side of the road singing this song, not making any attempt to be literal with the rhythm, and Grainger gets that across in this in a very fascinating way.
Percy Grainger was a terrific pianist.
Yeah.
But did he actually write all these arrangements for bands?
This particular piece was originally written for a band, and then he would always write other versions for other things. Here's a two piano or a four-hand piano version of this, or vocal versions. And so he was very known for, he wrote something, he wanted to hear it in many different ways. But this one happened to have started for band.
1937, the date on this, on this piece. So, but the tunes were collected earlier.
Right. Yeah, just at the turn of the century.
Well, let's hear Lord Melbourne while we still have you. I'm talking to Dr. Scott Borma, who will conduct the University Symphonic Band on Sunday. We're listening to Music of Percy Grainger with Dr. Scott Borma, the director of the university's symphonic band. This concert will be a bit of a workout, I think, coming up on Sunday at 3 o'clock, not just because of Grainger's way with different meters. We have music, as we mentioned, by Franz von Suppé, which will be led by Laura Zilhaver, graduate assistant conductor. A new piece by Viet Cong, his Sound and Smoke from 2011. And how does the program round itself out?
Well, we're going back to really recently composed music. This next piece was composed in 2012 by Ryan George, and it's called Riff Raff. And so we're taking you on quite a ride of different sounds and styles throughout this concert. And Ryan George is also a fairly young composer who is really getting noticed lately. Just in the last 15 years or so, he's writing some really compelling works for band. And Riff Raff, this piece was, as he says, born out of a renewed interest in post-war jazz and big band. And people like Kenton and Nelson Riddle and Ellington and some of the jazzy sounds of Bernstein you can hear in this music. And it's kind of it's not really programmatic, but he talks about this idea of a brooding lone figure who forges through life on his own terms and can be found in some of the fictional film characters like James Dean and Marlon Brando and hard-boiled detectives and heroes with pulp novels and film noir. It kind of has that feel to it, and you know, and it's really to go from a piece that was written in 1937 based on folk tunes to jumping ahead to this kind of style really takes a lot for students to switch mindsets and really think about the groove and the jazz feeling. And this goes along with the third stream movement of taking jazz and making it, putting it with a classical ensemble. And this is also quite a workout. We definitely just go to different places and different rhythms.
Well, you know, at the heart of the symphonic band are plenty of jazz students.
Yep, absolutely.
Who know this feeling.
But also plenty of non-jazz students. You know, the French horn players and the euphonium players and the clarinet players don't get a lot of jazz. And so this is a great opportunity for them to play this style and to learn this groove and the feel of it.
Oh, wonderful. And what will you close the concert with?
And we'll go back to 1941, Kenneth Alford. The Army of the Nile March, a good old standard British march, and everybody will be tapping their toes. And Kenneth Alford is actually a pen name of the actual person was Frederick Joseph Ricketts, a British composer mainly of marches. He was a bandmaster in the British Army and Royal Marines. So it'll be a fun way to end the concert, enjoyable march.
Well, I hope you have an enjoyable time conducting.
Oh, there's no question.
On Sunday with the opening concert of the symphonic band season, available to everyone who attends at 3 o'clock in Miller Auditorium. There is no cost to attend, so it should be a wonderful way to celebrate music on the weekend. Can you leave us with one more piece?
Yeah.
Would you leave us with one more piece?
Absolutely. I think it would be appropriate to end with the sixth movement of Granger's Lincolnshire Posy. Just kind of closes out the work with a delightful, jaunty tune.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.